brought to you by the Cannabis Bee Network.
Here is the Cannabis Bee News with your host, Scott Jacobs.
Hello, listeners. How's it going today? This is episode CBN 079-86-2014. Let's roll right into article number one. Since marijuana legalization, highway fatalities in Colorado are at near historic lows. Take it away.
Since marijuana legalization, highway fatalities in Colorado are at near historic lows. By Radley Balco. Source, The Washington Post. Since Colorado voters legalized pot in 2012, prohibition supporters have warned that recreational marijuana will lead to a scourge of drug divers on the state's roads. They often point out that when the state legalized medical marijuana in 2001, there was a surge in drivers found to have smoked pot. They also point to studies showing that in other states that have legalized pot for medical purposes, we've seen an increase in the number of drivers testing positive for the drug who were involved in fatal car accidents. The anti-pot group SAM recently pointed out that even before the first legal pot store opened in Washington state, the number of drivers in that state testing positive for pot jumped by a third. The problem with these criticisms is that we can test only for the presence of marijuana metabolites, not for inebriation. Metabolites can linger in the body for days after the drug's effects wear off, sometimes even for weeks. Because we all metabolize drugs differently and at different times and under different conditions, all that a positive test tells us is that the driver has smoked pot at some point in the past few days or weeks. It makes sense that loosening restrictions on pot would result in a higher percentage of drivers involved in fatal traffic accidents having smoked the drug at some point over the past few days or weeks. You'd also expect to find that a higher percentage of churchgoers, Good Samaritans and soup kitchen volunteers would have pot in their system. You'd expect a similar result among any large sampling of people. This doesn't necessarily mean that marijuana caused or was even a contributing factor to accidents, traffic violations or fatalities. This isn't an argument that pot wasn't a factor in at least some of those accidents, either. But that's precisely the point. A post-accident test for marijuana metabolites doesn't tell us much at all about whether pot contributed to the accident. Since the new Colorado law took effect in January, the drug driver panic has only intensified. I've already written about one dubious example, in which the Colorado Highway Patrol and some local and national media perpetuated a story that a driver was high on pot when he slammed into a couple of police cars parked on an interstate exit ramp. While the driver did have some pot in his system, his blood alcohol level was off the charts and was far more likely the cause of the accident. In my colleague Mark Fisher's recent dispatch from Colorado, law enforcement officials there and in bordering states warned that they're seeing more drug drivers. Congress recently held hearings on the matter, complete with dire predictions such as we are going to have a lot more people stoned on the highway and there will be consequences, from Republican John Mike Arfla. Some have called for a zero-tolerance policy if you're driving with any trace of pot in your system, you're guilty of a DWI. That would effectively ban anyone who smokes pot from driving for up to a couple of weeks after their last joint, including people who legitimately use the drug for medical reasons. It seems to me that the best way to gauge the effect legalization has had on the roadways is to look at what has happened on the roads since legalization took effect. Here's a month-by-month comparison of highway fatalities in Colorado through the first 7 months of this year and last year. For a more thorough comparison, I've also included the highest fatality figures for each month since 2002, the lowest for each month since 2002 and the average for each month since 2002. Colorado traffic deaths raw data from the Colorado Department of Transportation. As you can see, roadway fatalities this year are down from last year, and down from the 13-year average. Of the 7 months so far this year, 5 months saw a lower fatality figure this year than last, 2 months saw a slightly higher figure this year, and in 1 month the two figures were equal. If we add up the total fatalities from January through July, it looks like this. Colorado total deaths raw data from the Colorado Department of Transportation. Here, the high bar, pardon the pun, is what you get when you add the worst January since 2002 to the worst February, to the worst March, and so on. The low bar is the sum total of the safest January, February, etc., since 2002. What's notable here is that the totals so far in 2014 are closer to the safest composite year since 2002 than to the average year since 2002. I should also add here that these are total fatalities. If we were to calculate these figures as a rate, say, miles driven per fatality, the drop would be starker, both for this year and since Colorado legalized medical marijuana in 2001. While the number of miles Americans drive annually has leveled off nationally since the mid-2000s, the number of total miles traveled continues to go up in Colorado. If we were to measure by rate, then, the state would be at lows unseen in decades. The figures are similar in states that have legalized medical marijuana. While some studies have shown that the number of drivers involved in fatal collisions who test positive for marijuana has steadily increased as pot has become more available, other studies have shown that overall traffic fatalities in those states have dropped. Again, because the pot tests only measure for recent pot use, not inebriation, there's nothing inconsistent about those results. Of course, the continuing drop in roadway fatalities, in Colorado and elsewhere, is due to a variety of factors, such as better built cars and trucks, improved safety features and better road engineering. These figures in and of themselves only indicate that the roads are getting safer. They don't suggest that pot had anything to do with it. We're also only 7 months in. Maybe these figures will change. Finally, it's also possible that if it weren't for legal pot, the 2014 figures would be even lower. There's no real way to know that. We can only look at the data available. But you can bet that if fatalities were up this year, prohibition supporters would be blaming it on legal marijuana. Interestingly, though road fatalities have generally been falling in Colorado for a long time, 2013 actually saw a slight increase from 2012. So fatalities are down the year after legalization, after having gone up the year before. That said, some researchers have gone so far as to suggest that better access to pot is making the roads safer, at least marginally. The theory is that people are substituting pot for alcohol, and pot causes less driver impairment than booze. I'd need to see more studies before I'd be ready to endorse that theory. For example, there's also some research contradicting the theory that drinkers are ready to substitute pot for alcohol. But the data are far more supportive of that than of the claims that stoned drivers are menacing Colorado's roadways. Clarification, I wrote that we can test only for the presence of marijuana metabolites, not for inebriation. That isn't quite accurate. This is true of roadside tests. But a blood test taken at the hospitals can measure for THC, the psychoactive ingredient in marijuana. That said, even here there are problems. Regular users can still have remnant THC in their blood well after the effects have worn off. Regular users can also have levels above the legal limit and still drive perfectly well. In Colorado, a THC level of 5 nanograms or more brings a presumptive charge of driving under the influence. However, references to marijuana-related accidents in studies, by prohibitionists, and by law enforcement could refer to any measure or trace of the drug. So when officials and legalization opponents talk about increases in these figures, it still isn't clear what any of this means for road safety.
Article number 2. Why add hemp seed to your diet? Here are the benefits. Take it away.
Why add hemp seed to your diet? Here are the benefits. By Margaret Badauer. Source, treehugger.com. Hemp seed is similar to flax seed, but because hemp cultivation has historically been prohibited in most of the United States, its health benefits are less commonly known here. But as industrial hemp is putting down new roots in U.S., it's worth getting reacquainted with the nutritional benefits of the seed. Superfood. The term superfood gets thrown around a lot, but hemp seed deserves the title. It contains almost as much protein as soybeans, and is rich in vitamin E, calcium, potassium and magnesium. A study conducted in Finland found that both hemp seeds and hemp seed oil are an excellent source of nutrition, and that concerns about THC, the active compound in marijuana in these foods, are not supported by scientific evidence. But perhaps most importantly, hemp seed contains high levels of essential fatty acids, including linoleic acid, omega-6, and omega-3. Diets rich in these fatty acids, and lower in saturated fats, are associated with lower incidence of heart disease. Health booster. Hemp seed oil has been part of traditional medicine for thousands of years, but there's only limited clinical research into its benefits. Nonetheless, new trials are confirming these traditional uses. One review paper found that there has been enough research to support the hypothesis that hemp seed has the potential to beneficially influence heart disease. However, the authors argued that we still don't fully understand how much hemp seed is needed to produce this benefit, or how hemp seed should be used therapeutically. Other preliminary studies found that eating hemp seed could have positive effects on eczema and can help heal wounds when topically applied. How to eat? Hemp seeds have a lightly nutty flavor and can be eaten whole, pulled or ground. They can be added to recipes for baked goods, or sprinkled over just about anything. Hemp seeds are cold-pressed to extract oil, which can be used in dips, spreads, or salad dressings. However, it's not a good idea to cook with hemp seed oil, because heat will damage its nutritional value. Our U.S. readers will probably have to rely on imported hemp products for some time. Our northern neighbors in Canada have had success exporting hemp seed oil, but hopefully locally grown options will be available soon.
Article number 3. Hemp production on the rise. Take it away.
Hemp production on the rise. By Blake Lau. Source, globalnews.ca. An old crop with some new applications has drawn attention among Alberta farmers. Since 1998, the year growing low THC hemp was made legal, farming of the crop has been building steam. Now, it's poised to become a noticeable crop in southern Alberta. As the manager of the agricultural research company, Farming Smarter, Ken Coles studies the latest farming innovations. He has set up a plot of hemp crops on his own farm to better understand how to maximize harvesting efficiency. We've got 10 different types of hemp varieties that we are looking at. We're looking at how they perform in a southern Albertan environment. He's doing this research in anticipation of a surge of hemp production in the area. Recently there was a company called Manitoba Harvest that contracted an additional 20,000 acres of hemp in southern Alberta, says Coles. So the demand now for production information is great enough that we felt it was important to start doing some agronomic-based research. Manitoba Harvest develops natural and organic hemp-based food products. From hemp hearts to be sprinkled on salads or other foods to things like beverages and protein powders. Hemp food products taste very good, says Clarence Schwalick, director of farm operations with the company. And they're good for you, with the omega profiles. We know there is a strong demand for health food products and hemp fits exactly into that sort of demand. Right now hemp is being harvested for its hearts, which is the grain portion of the crop. But the durable fiber in the stock has plenty of applications as well. There's multiple uses. Things like hempcrete that's using hemp fiber to have a recyclable, lightweight concrete that has an insulation factor. There's just endless uses for basically a renewable resource in Canada. That's why research is continuing. Farmers in the area are not yet equipped to capitalize on the full potential of hemp products, although development of a processing facility that will make use of the stocks is underway. Right now, the growth of the health food industry is still alluring enough to get farmers' attention. It is very profitable, so growers that are good at growing specialty crops they can realize some very good returns with producing hemp, says Schwalick. With so much interest from local farmers, and a growing market demand for hemp, be prepared to see a lot more of the crop in Alberta fields. Ken Coles is confident farmers will be answering the call to grow. The innovative farmers are always wanting to be the first to grow something new and develop their skills so they can take advantage of the opportunities that are there before they're gone.
Article number 4. Florida cop breaks state law to lobby against medical marijuana. Take it away.
Florida cop breaks state law to lobby against medical marijuana. By Nicole Flato. Source, thinkprogress.org. North Miami Beach Police Officer Tom Carney opposes Florida's ballot initiative to legalize medical marijuana. So he sent an email explaining how the medical provision would still be a violation of federal law. But in sending the email, Carney himself violated his state's law. As the Miami Herald pointed out, non-elected officials like Carney are prohibited from sending emails about electoral politics from their work accounts. Violating the law, much like possessing marijuana, is a first-degree misdemeanor carrying up to a year in jail or a $1,000 fine. Carney sent an email with the subject line "The Truth About Medical Marijuana" before advocates decried the email as illegal politicking. But Carney riled advocates even further when a follow-up email clarifying his intent not to break the law once again contained the advocacy materials. The email contained talking points from the Florida Police Chiefs Association, several of which conflate legalization of recreational marijuana and recreational marijuana. Polls show medical marijuana has overwhelming public support both nationally and in the states that have voted on ballot measures. In Florida, varying polls have found support at between 66 and 82%, but Florida's battle over medical marijuana may be the most contentious, with some projecting that the POT initiative may swing the gubernatorial race toward Democratic challenger Charlie Crist. The Florida campaign got a major boost when gambling mogul and GOP megadonor Sheldon Adelson pitched in millions of dollars last month to fund opposition to the initiative. Adelson is backing a committee known as the Drug-Free Florida Committee formed by Mel Sembler. That committee has raised a total of $2.7 million so far, according to the Tampa Bay Times. Sembler, who bankrolled opposition to Colorado's recreational legalization initiative, once oversaw a chain of drug abuse treatment centers for teens, at which allegations have emerged of beatings, rape and psychological abuse. Adelson, meanwhile, recently funded a study in Israel on how medical marijuana can be used to treat multiple sclerosis. Another initiative called Don't Let Florida Go to Pot, referenced in Carney's email, is also opposing the initiative with the backing of Florida sheriffs. A much narrower bill that may have been aimed at diverting support from the medical marijuana initiative flew through the Florida legislature with near-universal support in May. Governor Rick Scott was convinced to support the bill that grants some low-THC pot, a non-smokable form, to patients with epilepsy and a select few other conditions. But Scott strongly opposes the November ballot initiative that would give more patients access to marijuana for a much more comprehensive list of medical conditions. In committing to sign the bill, Governor Rick Scott said, "I'm a parent and a grandparent. I want to make sure my children, my grandchildren, have access to the health care they want."
Article number 5. Canada's medical marijuana market heats up as public listing near. Take it away.
Canada's medical marijuana market heats up as public listings near. By John Tylik. Source, Reuters. Four Canadian medical marijuana producers are working on transactions that will allow them to go public in the next few weeks, according to industry sources and filings, giving investors fresh paths into a growing industry. Metrum Ltd., Organi Graham Incorporated, Bedrocan Canada Incorporated, and PharmaCan Capital, a holding company involved with three licensed producers, will join Tweed Marijuana Incorporated, now the only listed producer, on the TSX Venture Exchange TSXV. Once these companies become public, investors will be able to directly or indirectly own shares in seven, including the three associated with PharmaCan, of the 13 medical marijuana producers licensed by Health Canada. Tweed went public via a reverse takeover of a listed company in April and has a market value of $101 million, $92.7 million. Its rivals are involved in similar deals, which give fledgling companies seeking access to public markets the ability to list via shell companies already listed on an exchange. Several medical marijuana firms are listed on the less actively regulated over-the-counter market in the United States. But the nationwide regulations governing medical marijuana in Canada distinguish it from the U.S. market, where marijuana is illegal at the federal level, and are making the nascent sector attractive to both Canadian and foreign investors. Producers report robust demand from patients as well as rising interest from fund managers and venture capital firms. Further, signs of early consolidation have emerged, with Tweed acquiring a greenhouse facility in Ontario and PharmaCan buying licensed producer in the Zone Produce Limited. Bedrocan Canada, which has received conditional approval for its listing from the TSX Venture Exchange, is expected to be the first of this crop to go public. The partner of Dutch medical marijuana producer Bedrocan BV is currently valued at about $57 million based on its most recent round of financing, two sources close to the company said. It is building a 52,000-square-foot marijuana growing facility in Ontario that will begin production by year-end. Its rival, Toronto-based Metrum, is expected to be valued at about $80 million when it lists in about a month, according to two sources familiar with the matter. Jacob Securities, Jordan Capital Markets, Power One Capital Markets, Cormark Securities, Dundee Securities and M Partners are some of the investment banks leading these offerings. While most producers are based in Ontario and British Columbia, New Brunswick-based Organi Graham is trying to establish itself as the first organic producer and is focused on Eastern Canada. "There's tremendous appetite from investors on both sides of the border," Organi Graham chief executive Dennis Arsenault said. U.S. funds are trying to get into the space as they see Canada as a more regulated, investment-ready locale. Organi Graham is valued at about $35 million based on a recent financing. Arsenault expects Organi Graham to be listed on the TSXV in the next few weeks. In the past few months, more U.S. and Canadian institutional investors have started to warm up to the market, once seen as risky, unproven and lacking credibility. Canada is an attractive jurisdiction for sophisticated institutional capital seeking safe exposure to the growing medical marijuana industry, said Paul Rosen, CEO of PharmaCan. PharmaCan was most recently valued at about $50 million and is also likely to go public soon. Licensed producers MedRelief Corporation, Tyori, CanniMed and Delta 9 Biotech Incorporated have told Reuters in recent months that they are not looking to go public. In a separate development, U.S. authorities on Tuesday charged four stock promoters with civil fraud for manipulating the securities of marijuana-related and other micro-cap companies.
That's all I have for this episode. Till next episode, have a good day, good night, good week. Bye-bye.
We pollinated your mind. Now, go pollinate the world.